is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
Scott MacArthur, Dave Pullen, it's Overdrive. You're listening on TSN 1050. You're streaming us on the TSN Go app. You're watching us on TSN 2.
And we got a really fun show.
Yeah.
This has been a really cool show.
I just want to make sure that I got all that in and I didn't screw any of it up.
No,
this I'm new been, at this,
this
time
has
slot.
It's been really, really a very, very interesting show.
We've covered essentially two topics. The 29th anniversary of the Gretzky to LA deal.
And officials.
And officials. Because Joe West, Cowboy Joe, gets a 3-game suspension from Major League Baseball for talking to USA Today in part to acknowledge his 5,000th game umpire.
5,000's a lot, by the way.
Yeah,
that's a lot of baseball games.
These guys, they get some vacation. So I don't know if they do exactly 162. But give or take.
They get pulled out a couple times during the year, for sure.
So if you're doing 140.
That would probably be fair. That
games
would give
or
them,
so.
Yeah, that would give them. Yeah, they might get a month off during the year. They probably get two to three significant breaks.
I just divided 5,000 by 140. 35 and a half or so. So, well, and there you go. He started in the early 80s.
Well, we know he had a beef in 1983 with Joe Torre,
Joe
and that
Torre.
Was 34 years ago.
And you don't think Joe Torre
Joe
forgot.
Joe Torre held a grudge.
Because he's doing the discipline.
You know what? I think I'm going to wait till 2017 to suspend him.
Yeah. Just all those times he screwed me over when I was Yankees manager.
How great is that? Yankees manager? Joe Torre wasn't a Yankees manager in 83. He was.
No, he was Braves. And then he was Cardinals.
Right.
For a little while.
It was years
and then,
before he was Joe Torre.
But my point is they've shared a field hundreds of times since the 83 incident.
It's a round world, my friend.
Long.
That
long
old day. Adage about on the way up because you're going to see them on the way down.
Yeah. Don't kick the ass of someone on the way up whose ass you may need to kiss on the way down. Is that the old adage? So Steve Phillips, TSN's Blue Jays and MLB insider, will be along at 6:30, and I think we'll ask the question because we have to. Although I've already determined what the answer is. The question is, do the Blue Jays have a chance at the playoffs here? 4 games out of the second wildcard spot, Pooley, but 6 games under 500 and 7 teams in between them and that second wildcard spot. My answer to the question is no, but
I'm a former player. Always
exactly.
Yes.
You have
always
to believe.
Yes. Always yes, Scotty Mac. It used to drive me, and it's kind of interesting at what thoughts come into your head. Because you talked about Mike Keenan earlier, and Mike Keenan during a game, if he wanted to prove a point and you were down 4-0 in the second period, he would give up the game to prove a point. He would make his point during a game you were losing, and it drove me nuts because I didn't care that we were down 4-0 in the second period. I thought we could still win the game.
Okay, give me an example of how he'd prove his point.
Start messing with the lines and putting ridiculous combinations together.
He's probably pulled the starter three times.
Flip the goalie 6 times.
Yeah.
Forget 3 times. He'd flip goalies back and forth and start messing with them. And then he wouldn't put power play units on the ice when we had a power play. And you'd be looking at him going, okay, Mike, you win. Like, seriously, we still have a chance to win this game. We get a quick goal. We get a power play goal. We're down 2 going in the third. We can win a game. And so you're talking to a former player. I'm down 4 games on August 9th. I'm 4 games out of a wild card spot. Yes, I think I can. Because they have had ridiculous stretches. Some semblance of this group of players has had ridiculous stretches and something they can go back to refer to. And I've already clarified that Strosho is going to win every game he pitches for the rest of the year. We've determined that.
Well, exactly. Well, you see, but you're hit and miss with these predictions.
Not with that one, I'm not. As long as I'm hit with one prediction.
Well, so far you would have been right. You should have been right because he left Houston on Sunday with a sizable lead. He pitched great again.
I'm not my brother's keeper.
Real tough team. And unfortunately, Roberto Osuna, who will always escape criticism from these parts because he's been awesome. He's had a bad day.
Yeah, he coughed it up.
Kind of end of the of a tough week. Gives up four and they lose.
They're not out of it, Scotty Mac. And don't forget, they just don't. Yes, they have to be good, but a couple of the other teams are allowed to be bad too. Somebody's allowed.
Here's the complicating factor, though, for me, Pooley, which is when you have that many teams, essentially half the American League, in between you and the second wildcard spot, any night you don't win, chances are, odds are, you're going to give up ground to at least half those teams.
Yes.
Right? So you...
And any night you do win,
you can't
you're
going
to gain ground on at least half those teams.
Yes, but you can't go...
I am glass half full, buddy.
But you can't go 6 out of 10,
You've got to rip this thing off. You've got to tear it up. But you, the question was, can they do it?
And it's not impossible.
It's not. It's not. You have to get some good fortune. You have to get a couple of crazy bounces. You have to get an unexpected performance from a pitcher that you, that comes out of the blue. Something, and it's not Estrada or Stroh. It's not.
Is it Nick Tepish who's pitching tonight?
Nah, I'm thinking a little more Hap. You know, does Hap tear it up now? Does he go on a roll? I mean, you see these things happening, and somebody has to get hot at the plate. Number 20 could get hot at the plate.
Well, he's tearing it up now.
He is starting to tear it up. So can a former MVP put you on his shoulders, an unexpected pitcher, and, you know, J-Hap isn't an unexpected pitcher, but... someone who was hurt early in the year and is well-rested. I always feared teams that had rested guys, Scotty. J-Hap's a little more rested than the other guys are right now. Can they do it? Yes, they can do it.
Here's the other thing I'll be keeping an eye out for. Devin Travis has taken some batting practice of late. And
huge injection.
What is this? August? I never know the dates. It's 9th. August the 9th. We've only talked about this with regard to
the diminutive one's birthday in my family. It's August 9th.
Happy birthday to your daughter.
Yeah, Miss Kylie.
How old today?
27.
Wow.
Starting a brilliant new career. So excited.
In an amazing city.
In an amazing city of Chicago that you're heading to next week.
Can't wait to be there in a week and a half to see the Cubbies and Blue Jays.
So what have you got?
So, Travis.
That would be like making a huge trade after the waiver trade deadline.
Well, here's the thing. It's August 9th. The full season... minor league seasons conclude on Labor Day, presuming that your teams don't make the playoffs.
Right.
And if you look at the Bisons and Fisher Cats, the AA New Hampshire's
expanded
records,
rosters. They're
not making the playoffs. So to get Devin Travis out on a rehab assignment, that's going to have to happen in the next 3 or 4 weeks to get him some minor league at-bats. Again, presuming that he can get there. If that happens and you're somewhere in the conversation and he comes back, look, he's going to have to get right into the swing of things and contribute here. But that would be, as you say, a huge injection into that lineup.
You need a little magic here, Scott.
There's too much Pilar and Barney and Ref Snyder and Goins.
Ref Snyder's a good name, though.
There are too many of those.
A good name.
Yeah. Robbie Ref Snyder.
That's a great name.
There are too many of those bats in the lineup right now.
Yeah,
i.e., they can't hit. So, you know, you got to start winning series consistently. You've got to find some magic if you believe in that sort of thing.
Oh,
and
of course I believe in it. Are you kidding me? How could I not believe in magic?
I've had, in my years covering baseball, I've had it drilled into my head. It's all empirical. The data has got to be empirical. There's got to be proof. Don't dream on anything big. But they have to go.
Living proof that you can believe in magic, my friend.
They have to go. I'd say 650, 700 baseball, 65 to 70%. They got to win that much of their remaining games.
No, what they really have to do is go 65 or 70% for 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks, and plant the seed and get some other teams saying, "Uh-oh, here come the Jays. We thought they were capable. Now they're capable." That's the kind of help you need. But you need to do it now. This isn't getting into the last week in August.
I'll tell you
right
this
now.
Okay, Pooley. Okay, I'll buckle up and I'll tell you when I'll believe. And we can come back and revisit this later. You got the Yankees for two more nights. You got an interleague series.
You sweep this series.
You got an interleague series this weekend at home with Pittsburgh. And then you've got the Tampa Bay Rays coming in for four. And the Rays are one of those. Well, the Yankees are too.
Sweep the Rays.
But the Yankees actually hold the first wild card spot right now. Tampa Bay is lockstep with Kansas City at the moment for that second wild card spot.
So I'm going to pick my loss. It's going to be against Pittsburgh this weekend, and I'm going to sweep Tampa Bay.
So I'll give you this. If they lay a kicking 3 out of 4 or a sweep on the Tampa Bay Rays, mm-hmm. and they close that gap in the process. Mm-hmm. The other thing that also could happen is if Kansas City and Tampa Bay struggle, there are other teams that could leapfrog them and keep the Jays kind of 3 or 4 back.
Mr. Pessimist.
That's possible.
Said.
That's possible. Well, I'm just giving you all the parameters. But if you do some damage against the Rays next week, and we know Tampa Bay is the ultimate mosquito, you swat them, you swat them, you swat them, and they won't go away.
Evan Longoria hits 2 home runs.
Yeah, Chris Archer goes 8 scoreless. You know, anything's possible there.
Longoria's such a Jays killer.
If they can have a good week next week against the Rays, and then they take the act
because
on the road.
Because that starts to put pressure on the other team, Scotty, and that's right. What you have to do right now.
All right. Earlier on this afternoon, Bruce McNall joined us on the program, and as we were planning the show today, we thought we'd like to bring this interview into the TV hour. It worked out for Bruce that he could join us at 4:30, but we thought, let's bring this interview into the TV hour. It's 29 years ago today that Wayne Gretzky was traded. And so for 29 years, we've been saying, yeah, he could be traded. Because if Wayne Gretzky was traded, anybody can be traded. That's where that phrase was invented. And Bruce McNall at the time was the owner of the Los Angeles Kings. And he took some time to join us earlier on this afternoon. We want to run this for you now. The first thing we asked Bruce was, you know, what was the first thing, or what is the first thing that comes to mind each August 9th?
How old I'm getting, I think, is number one. Oh, my God. It's like I spoke to Wayne this morning, and he said, Jesus, can you imagine this 29 years ago? I was 37, and he was 27, and, and who knew? I mean, I don't think either of us thought it would be – we thought it would be big for L.A. and so forth. I don't think either of us thought it would be – have the, you know, the overall impact it had. So it was pretty cool.
When did – the discussions, Bruce, begin? Or at least, when did you become involved? Because the trade was consummated on August the 9th, 1988. But right. I think we all know this wouldn't have taken, you know, less than 24 hours to put together. How long did it play out?
It was a long haul, because when I first bought the team in 86, Jerry Buss, the then owner, mentioned to me, boy, wouldn't it be great to get Gretzky, and blah, blah, blah. And I said, yeah, right, good luck. And then from that day on, every time I would see Peter Pocklington at the owner meetings, I would always ask him. And he'd blow me off and basically say, you know, this is like, you can give me the whole team and I'm not going to happen. And I wouldn't blame him. I sort of get the drill. And I kept bugging him. Every time I saw him, I would bug him. And then one day out of the blue, he called me and said, if you're serious about Gretzky, we can talk. And I almost fell over my chair. That was in the summer of 88, June or so. And right away, the first thing he said to me is, I need a lot of cash. I need $15 million U.S. I said, okay, that's done, as fast as I could say it. And from then on, it took all the way from June to August to basically get the deal done, which, you know, was, as you can imagine, very complex. And Gwen Sather wanted no part of it all. And, was mad at me, mad at everybody to make this thing happen. And it really wasn't going to go down for a long time, because I was concerned that Wayne really didn't want to move, and he didn't want to move. He wanted to stay at Edmonton Oilers until finally he got the realization that, yeah, it's the trade's in the midst here with myself or maybe others. And he said, okay, I'm a King then, because that's where I want to be. So that was basically in early part of August.
Bruce, I was the captain of the Flyers at the time, and I was ecstatic because I thought you were breaking up the Oilers that had cost me 2 of the 3 Stanley Cups in the years before that.
I remember you very well during that period. I tried to get you too, by the way. Didn't work.
I think you got the right guy. I got to be honest with you. I think you got the right guy. But talk about your first conversation with Wayne, because that happened before the trade was consummated, correct?
Oh yeah, way before. I was never given permission to speak to Wayne. And as you could probably, as you know from my history, I don't seem to do very well with rules, you know? So once again, I ignored that rule and I called Wayne. Mainly because I was concerned that if he really didn't want to come to LA, I don't want to pursue a trade, you know, with the greatest player in the world who doesn't want to play, you know, doesn't want to move from Edmonton. So I spoke to Wayne early on and he was shocked in the beginning. And then, as I said, later on, as he became to realize it was going to happen, he became a very big part of the whole trading process. He and I would have conversations every day. He'd be at my office every day. As the negotiations are going on, you know, they wanted Robitaille first. I said, absolutely not. And then Wayne would say, no, you can't give away Luke. I need somebody to score. You know, so I can pass it to somebody.
Another good decision.
Right. So I said, yeah, I know. I'm not going to trade Luke. That's not going to happen. And then they went back and forth. Finally, we came to Jimmy Carson and Wayne said, well, look, he is a first line center. He'll be a second line center now. Maybe in Edmonton he could do away, so I guess we can handle that. At the very, very end, one of the last things that happened was we had agreed to 3 first round draft picks. And Wayne said, absolutely not. You've got to stagger them because there were going to be 3 in a row. And he said, we need to stagger them for every other year. So that was Wayne's idea. And when I went back to Pocklington and you know, we finally agreed to that, that's what ended up happening. So Wayne was a part of the trade from, you know, early on, basically. Once he realized that it was going to happen, he became part of the process.
I have to remind people, too, that at that point there were 21 teams in the NHL, and I think what everybody underestimated was the impact it could potentially have, because I credit that one move with the fact that there are 31 teams in the NHL today. Look at the exponential growth and where those teams are located.
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, in looking back, and Wayne and I talk about this quite a bit, I don't think we didn't think at that time it was going to have that kind of impact. I was personally trying to build a great team and bring awareness to Southern California of hockey. But we went to training camp and the whole thing went crazy. Both of us realized, oh my goodness, we've got an opportunity to really build something here. So that's why we spent a lot of time touring around the various cities that now have hockey to try to promote the league and try to promote the game itself and hold the exhibition games all around wherever we could. You know, and they were selling out every game, and we realized, wow, you know, I think hockey can sustain itself in these other areas. And luckily enough, for the most part, we were right. So it was a proud moment in that regard.
With Bruce McNall, former owner of the LA Kings, on the 29th anniversary of the trade that sent Wayne Gretzky to SoCal from Edmonton. We were talking earlier on in the show, Dave and I, Bruce, about that time period in LA. You still had Magic Johnson, and it was still the Johnson Bird thing with the Lakers and Celtics. You had a Dodgers baseball team that a couple of months after you do the deal would go on to win the World Series, and the LA Dodgers are a huge deal down there. For anybody who doesn't know that, that's some context. Where did you guys immediately fit in the sports landscape? Because to my recollection, Kings games became almost immediately the place for Hollywood's elite to be seen.
Yeah, it was absolutely insane. The minute we did the deal, I mean, I'm getting calls from every movie star in Hollywood. You know, they want to come, they want to do this and that. I mean, the agents, everybody came. I had a dinner every game, prior to every game. I had about 40 people at a big table at our club there. And, I mean, the idea of getting invited to that event were big deals. We had, you know, 2 sitting United States presidents who would, you know, beg to come. It became crazy. We're the only team to this day that sold out every single game. Not even the Dodgers in their heyday, not the Lakers in their heyday. Sold out every single game. It became, the thing to do and the place to be. And, you know, one of my goals was try to make it that way. You know, I'm sort of in the entertainment world. I know what it takes to compete with the other entertainment factors in Los Angeles, which there are a lot. And, we just tried to make it the happening thing. And I made sure every movie star was there that I could and had them front and center and, you know, right in the middle of the crowd. And You know, and they loved it. And it became, you know, the thing to do basically in LA for that period of time. And Wayne was the reason it happened.
How important was the Los Angeles component to this, Bruce? Like, what if you hypothetically owned or had purchased an NHL team at the time in Dallas or some right. other major southern United States city? I can't imagine it would have been the same.
No. LA is the place, you know, that, yeah, LA is it because it's the media capital, arguably, of the world, and it's the place that, you know, every star in Hollywood, everybody shows up. It's the place to be, and I don't think there was any place in the world that would have had the impact that Wayne had, except Los Angeles. I think that this is the city that he had to be in, and, you know, it was fortunate that all the stars aligned, and it worked out that way, that at that moment in time, Wayne was available. I was able to find a way to get him. And believe me, near the end, it was very scary for me because Peter started getting the word out. The word started getting out that the trade may happen, thanks to certain media people, including TSN, deciding that figuring out a little bit about what's going on. And then Peter started completely freaking out, deciding, wait a minute here, I don't want to get this, you know, this problem. And he was about ready to pull out. And it was actually Wayne that held the whole thing together and said, no, I'm the LA King now, so we're moving forward. But it was scary.
With Bruce McNall, former owner of the Kings, 29 years ago, Wayne Gretzky was traded to LA from Edmonton. What do you remember, Bruce, about what Wayne went through? Because, and I was a kid at the time, Pooley was playing in the NHL, but there was a lot of, I think, angst in Canada. I remember Wayne having to go public and say, hey, look, I'm still the kid from Brantford, Ontario, who won some Stanley Cups with the Edmonton Oilers. I'm still a Canadian. I haven't turned my back on my country. I can't put that into context to ever think that that would have been the possible response from Joe Q Canadian, but it was. Was it stressful on Wayne? Did he talk to you a lot about that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Wayne and I spent a lot of time together. You know, at that point in time, we were, you know, probably the closest friends that I've ever had in my life, and he, too, would probably say the same thing. And so those emotional moments, and again, people didn't really understand. Oddly enough, every time we would fly into even Edmonton, the fans were terrific because they blamed Peter for the mess in their minds and not Wayne or not myself so much. They realized that, hey, I'm taking care of Wayne. And what person in the right mind, given the opportunity to trade for Wayne Gretzky, wouldn't do it? Who in the heck would not do that? So they were always nice to me and to Wayne. You know, there was a lot of media at the time, you know, a lot of things with Janet controlling things and all the rest of it, which we knew wasn't the case because we were there. We lived it. We were the people doing it. And Wayne went through it. You know, he went through a tough time. I mean, it was tough. He did not want to leave Edmonton. I mean, believe me, that was not his idea at all. He was very upset leaving his buddies and the city itself, and had a lot of friends. And, you know, he really didn't want to until he realized it had to happen. So once we got over that, Wayne was able to deal with it in somehow or the other. But it was an emotional moment for sure.
Bruce, it was great of you to take some time this afternoon. Fascinating conversation. It's an anniversary none of us will ever forget, and we mark it each and every August 9th. Thank you, and I hope we can catch up again.
You got it. Anytime.
Bruce McNall, the former owner of the Los Angeles Kings. And that is a deal we'll talk about on this date, I think, but for as long as we live.
As we should.
You have a quick theory, and we got to get out because Steve Phillips is going to join us, but you have a quick theory about why the trade more broadly didn't end up working for the Oilers if you trace the lineage of the players that they got.
Well, it's crazy because they ended up getting 5 first-round draft picks. Jimmy Carson was coming off a monster year with 107 points at 19 years old. And by the time he was 23, 24 years old, he was on his way out of the game. Like, just an absolute cataclysmic drop. And I've got to know Jimmy Carson in recent years, and he's a highly, highly successful guy. I just don't think he liked being a hockey player or a hockey star. Martin Jalonen was a good player. That was the 7th overall pick in the draft. And then in 89, they took Jason Miller, 6 total games in the NHL. In 91, Martin Rozinski, 2 games for the Edmonton Oilers. Two games.
Decent career, but not decent, with Edmonton.
But not with Edmonton. Yeah. And 93, they took Nick Stadahar, two games in the NHL. In the NHL. Those are all first-round picks. Now, let's not discount the $15 million cash, which was what started the whole conversation. And as McNall said, he could not have answered that fast enough. But you have essentially five first-round picks, and the one that turned out, and he turned into a serviceable third, fourth-line player, was Martin Jelen, who was the seventh overall pick in the draft. One of five. And that's why you caution people to say, draft-wise, you know, are no-brainers. We need draft picks. You need to draft well.
All right, coming up on the other side. Pooley says yes. I say no. Do the Blue Jays have a legit shot at the playoffs? We'll let Steve Phillips, TSN's Blue Jays and MLB insider, break the tie. He joins us next, Overdrive, on TSN 1050, TSN 2, and streaming on the TSN Go app. So, Pooley says yes. I say no. Understanding that it's not impossible, but it is highly unlikely.
But I'm a former player. It's August 9th. I think we can rip off a number of games in a row.
Okay, so
I think Strosho is going undefeated the rest of the season.
Well, you said that before. And he
and you need a little magic, let's face it. But you need to put pressure in the next week to 10 days on the other teams and have them looking over their shoulder and say, oh no, are the Jays finally getting it together? That's critical.
Right, so you're saying yes and I'm saying no to do the Blue Jays have a chance to make the playoffs? So what we have here is a tie and we need somebody to break it. So let's go to Steve Phillips, TSN's and TSN 1050's Blue Jays and MLB insider, who is brought to you by Oakland Ford Lincoln, your premier source for auto service and sales in the GTA. Break the tie, Mr. Phillips, and remember, I'm your best friend. Do the Blue Jays have a chance?
Well, I mean, listen, the math says they do, but my experience says they don't. That it's going to be, you know, it's wishful thinking to think that they're going to make the run necessary and to be able to sustain it to truly put themselves in a position to compete. I mean, obviously playing the Yankees for three, the Pirates are playing good baseball, the Rays are hungry, and then you've got the Cubs and the Rays again and the Twins and the Red Sox. You got all these teams that actually all are ahead of them in the standings and in their records. So I think, you know, it's going to take really strong, deep starting pitching to be able to do it. And I just don't see that being the case right now with this rotation. So, you know, without Sanchez in there, obviously the Liriano move and how they've tried to piece that together as well has been a challenge. So, no, I think it's a real, real stretch to think that they could truly get back in this race.
But, Steve, you've helped my argument because you've said they're playing the teams that are above them. So, actually, they're playing a perfect schedule. And if you bite it off, you know, piece by piece, as you do when you eat an elephant, you actually believe that if you do it in really short stints and get everybody else thinking, that's the key in my mind. You have to do it over the next 10 days to 2 weeks and at least put that seed of doubt in someone else's mind that think the Jays are coming.
Yeah, the challenge is going to be they need that seed of doubt in five other teams' minds. I mean, really, because that's really what they're looking at right now with the number of teams in the standings. I mean, look, they got four ahead of them in the division. And then in the wild card, you know, those four are certainly still all in front of them as well. And then you're looking at Texas, they traded Darvish and they sold. And yet, you know, they've got Joey Gallo with 31 home runs and Beltre and Andrews and some experience there. The Angels are playing, they're playing good baseball. Trout's back healthy and putting up huge numbers. Minnesota's come to life, haven't won three in a row. And Baltimore. So, and Baltimore is like, I don't get Baltimore. They've got no business doing what they're doing, but they are. And, you know, all of those teams have been playing better. They've been healthier. They've been performing more. And so I just think that the Jays can make a run, but other teams are still going to do that in front of them as well. So, Listen, it would make it more interesting over the final 2 months if they do make a run, for sure. But I think it's a real stretch right now.
You're on Twitter now, Steve, which is like a big deal. Because you were, I mean, let's be honest, you were one of the media's last holdouts. You finally went in head first, right?
Yeah, I did. And at Steve Phillips GM, is my Twitter handle. And I'm closing in on 1,500 people following me already. And so I am on Twitter. And so if people disagree, they can tweet at me. But if they agree, they can tweet at me as well. I kind of like those ones a lot better.
All right. Well, I'm following or stalking you on Twitter. And I thought it was interesting. You were laying out who you liked best right now in the American League playoffs. And we'd look at the standings and we would automatically assume, boom, Houston's got to be the favorite. They're 30 games over 500. They're running away with the American League West. But you make the argument that if October were to start today, you'd feel more comfortable with Cleveland or with Boston than you would with Houston. Explain your rationale. Maybe even Tampa Bay, as you tweeted.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think right now the Houston Astros have the best record in the American League by far, like seven and a half games ahead of the Boston Red Sox right now. But I would rather play Houston than I would play Boston. I'd rather play Houston instead of Cleveland. I'd rather play Houston instead of the Yankees, the Royals, the Mariners, and the Rays. Because I look at the Houston Astros, and Dallas Keuchel has a 10.5 ERA in his three starts since coming off the disabled list. He's walked more batters than he has struck out. His stuff isn't what it used to be. His command isn't what it used to be. The movement's not what it used to be. Lance McCullers Jr. is on the disabled list and doesn't seem to be getting better. So I don't like their starting pitching. I like starting pitchers one or two deep on every other potential playoff team more than I like the Astros starting pitching. And I know the Astros have a good offense, but the other teams in the playoffs actually have good pitchers, and good pitching can shut down good offense. And so, yeah, I've got some real concerns for the Astros. I think this is such a lost opportunity. Look, now they'll shock everybody and go out and win. And I'm not alone in the way I feel about the Astros. But I am looking at that they are vulnerable to get eliminated early and quickly because of the lack of starting pitching.
You know, Steve, the Chicago Cubs used to have maybe the top farm system in baseball as they built toward the World Championship last year. Now I don't think they have a prospect in Major League Baseball's top 100, and that's because they traded Gleyber Torres to the Yankees in the Aroldis Chapman deal last year. They traded Jaime Candelario to Detroit for Justin Wilson leading up to the trade deadline a couple of weeks ago. If they're in go-for-it-now mode, prospects, especially if you have position players scattered all over the field who are going to start for you for years, prospects are going to get blocked. Houston's kind of in the same situation. Are you of the opinion that they're not going out and being aggressive because they're prospect hoarding? And if so, are they missing the boat?
Yeah, I think they're absolutely missing the boat. I mean, the idea is to try to win. And it's not to just be competitive for as many years as possible. The idea is to win. And look, right now, the prospects that the Cubs have, they're all in the major leagues, right? They're playing at the major league level for them. So they traded away some other guys to get some veterans to mix in with the great young talent that they have. But their prospect is Kyle Schwarber. It's Javier Baez. It's Chris Bryant. It's these guys who are in the second, third years of their career who are going to be playing there for the next four or five. And so, you know, if you have a third baseman in the Cubs farm system, what good does he do you if you've got Chris Bryant who's going to be your third baseman? So if you can move that guy, who's only going to get backlogged with talent, he's going to be blocked for a long time. If you can move him and get a piece to help your major league team win now, why wouldn't you take it? And by the same token, the Astros, it's illogical to me the way that they're thinking, that they say, well, we're not going to overpay. I don't know what that means. I mean, you pay the price you have to pay to get the player to help you win a championship. And the market dictates what it is. And you can say no, but the risk you run is that you're going to come up short at the major league level. You're going to come up short in the postseason. And what's going to happen is your prospects are all going to, you know, they're going to wilt on the vine because they're not going to get an opportunity in the big leagues. Because where's George Springer go? Where's Altuve and Correa and Bregman going? They're there for the duration. for this team. You signed Reddick to a 4-year deal. So if you got a prospect at AAA, it's got you. Listen, you gave Reddick the money for the next 4 years. He's going to be there three beyond this year. So Derek Fisher, I love him, but there's not really going to be great opportunity for him. So maybe you move him, include him in a deal, and get the pieces you need. They whiffed big time on Sonny Gray. They should have been in on Darvish. They could have gotten both of them and still had talent in their farm system and won a World Series this year.
Steve Phillips is with us on Overdrive. He's TSN, TSN 1050's Blue Jays and MLB insider.
Steve, we had an interesting conversation with Jim McKean, the former umpire, and it was about Joe West and the three-game suspension. Cowboy Joe West.
Right.
And the three-game suspension. And we went back and forth on personalities in reffing in hockey and umpires in baseball, and that a lot of them are lacking in the positive sense of having a big personality and the way that can make an umpire even better. Where are your thoughts on that and whether that can be a factor in today's game, still having a personality for an umpire?
Yeah, I personally believe the best officials are the ones you don't notice. That's what I believe, that you don't even notice that they're there, that the game is about the competition. The game that you're watching is about the players, and the officials are there to stay out of the way and just manage it and keep it under control and make the appropriate calls. Now, look, you're not going to get every call right, but it should never be about the personality of provoking emotions out of players. It's emotional enough. Make the call. If the player reacts inappropriately, give him a little bit of rope. If he goes too far, kick him out of the game. But don't make it about you. And I think that we've got a lot of guys in Major League Baseball who make it about themselves because they think people are paying their ticket prices to come watch them umpire a game when they're really there to watch the players. You know, and Joe West is 3-game suspension for the things he said to USA Today about Adrian Beltre, where he called him the biggest complainer in baseball and went on to say, you know, I said this to him and told him he'd make a horrible umpire and that he stinks as an umpire. He's a great player. But it's inappropriate. If a player talked about an umpire in that way of, you know, this guy has the worst personality, this guy has the worst this and that, the player would get suspended as well. And so there should be accountability going both ways. I'm glad that we know about it. I'm glad we found out about it. I'm glad that it's public, because when a player gets suspended, there's a press release issued for Major League Baseball. Now, the only releases I saw for this came out of the World Baseball or World Umpires Association offices. I think it's absolutely the right thing. Now, there is a part of it, and I actually tweeted this out, there's a part of Joe West being suspended for what he said about Adrian Beltre that feels a little bit like Al Capone going to jail for tax evasion. Like he did a lot worse things than that, and you're nabbing him for this one, but, you know, at least there's some accountability, and it should go both ways, but I think it's important that it does go both ways, and I think finally we're seeing that it will.
Great stuff, Steve. Wish we had more time. We'll talk soon.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Steve Phillips, TSN, TSN 1050, Blue Jays and MLB Insider, brought to you by the Oakland Ford Lincoln Quick Lane, conveniently located at 570 Trafalgar Road in Oakville. Dave and I back in a second to put a wrap on Overdrive for your Wednesday. Stay with us. You're listening to TSN 1050. You're watching on TSN 2. You're streaming us on the TSN Go app. Scott MacArthur, Dave Poulin. It's Overdrive on your Wednesday, TSN 1050, TSN 2, and the TSN Go app. It's time now for today's Best Bets, brought to you by Proline. And I'm on baseball tonight. I like Houston. Astros have been struggling, but I like them as the visitor plus against the real bad White Sox. The interleague series between the Twins and Brewers shifts to Milwaukee. I'm on the Brewers tonight. They got a chance to gain on the Cubs, who lost this afternoon. And I like the Royals to beat the Cardinals on the road. So take Kansas City as the visitor. Throw down $20. This ticket will pay you $92.80. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio, and you can get way into the game with Proline. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Before you wager, get the latest odds, event info, and matchup stats on your phone. Proline, get way into the game. So we've got like 3 minutes here, Pooley. I'm going to put you on the spot, because I think this is going to be the last.
You're not going to ask about me getting traded to L.A.?
Man, your heart is broken.
Sorry.
We could digress.
You know, I want the question.
29 years of history. What would Dave Poulin be doing right now if he'd become an L.A. King when Wayne Gretzky was acquired?
Oh, boy.
Amazing, eh?
Yeah. No, go ahead with whatever question you were.
Well, I was going to put you on the spot because I think this is going to be the last time you and I share the studio before September rolls around and everything ramps back up. If you have one thing you're looking for in terms of optimism, in terms of a cautionary deal with the Maple Leafs heading into this season, where for the first time in a long time, Pooley, the expectations are really, really high. What's that one story or one theme you're looking at?
The next step. The next step of individuals on this hockey team. And there were so many kids that had great years this year, from Matthews to Nylander to Marner. I'm talking about the young group. And the cautionary tale for me is in 2013-14, the Colorado Avalanche had 52 wins. And their top four scorers were Matt Duchene, 22 years old, Gabriel Landeskog, 20 years old, Ryan O'Reilly, 22 years old, and Nathan MacKinnon, 18 years old. And Varlamov was absolutely terrific in net, and he'd have been 25 or 26 years old. And everything looked so unbelievably rosy for that franchise. And they didn't take the next step. The individuals did not take the next step. So that's what you look for. That's the interest. How does this group of young star players, and they are stars already, take the next step?
Yeah. And the
notion, isn't that amazing about Colorado when you look at it that way?
Yeah. I mean, advanced analytics people will tell you that there was some luck in that season and that it all fell apart and that some of those,
what's that, 112 points,
well,
52
yeah,
wins,
exactly,
and 8 ties?
No. Well, it was a huge year.
Huge year for individuals. And that's what I look at, is individuals have to progress for a team to progress.
Right. If a guy, and this is the thing, we got to be careful about this. Guy goes into a 5 or a 10 game slump and we start throwing out the sophomore jinx.
Yeah,
we got to allow these guys a little bit of room to breathe.
Right.
But they have to grow
and they have to continue to grow. And that's the challenge of a professional athlete.
You got it.
It just is.
This was a blast.
Yeah, we had a good day.
You enjoy the golf tournament this coming weekend.
Yeah, I got a bunch of referees to deal with this weekend. Billy McCreary's golf tournament up at Laura Bay, and we'll have some fun up with that.
All right, stay with us on TSN 1050. Naylor and Landsberg in the morning with you, 6 o'clock tomorrow.